It's the Big 550 KTRS. I am Paul Harris filling in from McGraw today. In 3 weeks, there's going to be an episode of the PBS series American Experience that will feature a one-hour documentary about Bonnie and Clyde. And much of it takes place right here in the state of Missouri, particularly a very famous portion of the Bonnie and Clyde story involving a very famous picture, a picture that became iconic of Bonnie leaning on a car, holding a pistol, a cigar in her mouth. All of this helped make the legend of Bonnie and Clyde almost as big as what they were really doing in real life. Joining me now is the man who has written and directed that documentary for American Experience, John Maggio. Hi, John. How are you?
Good, Paul. How are you? Thanks for having me.
Good. I really enjoyed this. Thank you for sending me an advanced copy of it so I can look at this one-hour documentary. What stunned me right at the beginning was that when Clyde died, he and Bonnie had become such celebrities that people lined up by the thousands for his funeral. They were folk heroes, weren't they?
They were. They became folk heroes because of those photographs that were discovered of them in Missouri, in Joplin, Missouri. But it just goes to show you that this kind of our sort of enthusiasm and attraction to these types of outlaw figures have always been with us, you know. And there were over 10,000 people, just crowds, and they had incredible footage of it. Just thronging into Dallas, these funeral homes in Dallas, trying to get a last glimpse or touch the casket or get some piece of the Bonnie and Clyde legend that had become so big.
Now, this was in the early 30s at the height of the Depression, at a time when we had other celebrity gangsters running around the country, right?
Yeah, absolutely. They fit into that. I mean, they were really the first ones to go down. And then after them, it was like a domino effect. Dillinger, all the rest of them all went down. The interesting thing about Bonnie and Clyde is a lot of the crime had been very urban crime, you know, starting with the Prohibition gangsters, up through people like Dillinger, Babyface Finster, all these characters. But they, Babyface Nelson, rather. But they were in the countryside. And so that also, that gave them a little bit of anonymity, but it also it made them even scarier in a way. And so they fit into this kind of Depression era gangster period that ends almost like immediately after their demise. I mean, Roosevelt and the FBI and Hoover, they clean up the most of those gangsters by the end of 34, 35.
You know, the notion of the celebrity gangster, we don't see that often anymore. I guess maybe John Gotti was one of the last that we saw a couple of decades ago, because notoriety would seem to me to be bad for business when you're trying to be a criminal. Did Bonnie and Clyde chase fame?
No. If anything, they were very much aware of it after Joplin, especially after the photographs were, you know, just by way of background, they were camped out in a hotel, actually a rooming house in Joplin, Missouri, when the police finally caught up with them. And they left. They left so quickly. They left behind all of this undeveloped film. And then the police developed the film, and they saw these iconic photographs of these people, which then spread across the country. So everybody knew who Bonnie and Clyde were. But they didn't want that notoriety. I mean, I think in large part, Bonnie sort of enjoyed it. Clyde didn't want it. He wanted to stay anonymous. He wanted to stay under the radar, and made their life even more difficult to be on the run once those photos were published across the country.
In 1933, was being a gangster a glamorous job? Did they live a glamorous life?
It certainly appeared that way. It was not glamorous at all for them on the road. I mean, they couldn't stay in any one place for longer than a night. They were bathing in streams. They were eating out of whatever canned food they could find. It was not at all a glamorous lifestyle. But the images we were seeing in the movies, up before even the production code came into Hollywood in 1934, were all quite glamorous. You know, you have James Cagney was one of the biggest movie stars in the world. He played these very ruthless gangsters with nice suits and got what they wanted and always got the girl. So the image in society was that it was glamorous, but in reality, obviously, it wasn't.
You mentioned movies. Of course, there was the 1967 movie about Bonnie and Clyde made by Arthur Penn and starring Warren Beatty and Faye Dunaway, a classic that actually helped change cinema. I know that for your documentary, you talked to people who knew Bonnie and Clyde and members of their family, including Buddy Barrow, who is Clyde's nephew. What did he think of the movie?
He thought it was sort of like an amusement park ride. I mean, he obviously saw lots of flaws in it. And he's not one to want to glorify the duo. I mean, he was close to his uncle and his father, of course, and But he thought it was kind of a little bit make-believe in his estimation. You know, and there is the classic sort of, you know, Warren Beatty is somebody who was of dubious sexuality in that film, you know, or was at least somewhat impotent some way. And Buddy Barrow took umbrage with that fact. It's apparently Clive was quite a well-known lady man in Dallas at his time.
And you also talked to Bonnie's niece, Raylene Linder. What did she say?
She felt the same way. I mean, she thought that the portrayal of Bonnie was a little bit of Bonnie in the movie, in the 67 movie, was a little bit not the person that she heard and she knew about. You know, Bonnie could have been something if she had been oriented in the right way. She was actually, you know, her poetry is not actually that bad. And the fact that she wanted to write the poetry, write the story of Bonnie and Clyde is certainly an interesting thing for a woman at that time. So she's a very complicated character. She was the one, when we talked earlier about fame, who I think wanted fame and maybe had a little bit of talent for it, and maybe would have, you know, instead of, if this were in the 2000s, she would have been maybe more of a Kardashian. Maybe she would have gone to Hollywood and become famous for just for being famous.
One of the things that stuck with me from your documentary about Bonnie and Clyde, John, was that Clyde was so adept at stealing cars and that he stole particularly fast cars.
Yeah.
Now, we're talking about 80-plus years ago. How fast were the cars?
They would go pretty fast. You can get going 80, 90 miles an hour. And, you know, those Ford V8s could really, really, really rip it up. And the issue was not so much how fast those cars could go on their own. It was how much faster they were than the police cars.
That's the key, isn't it?
That's the key, right? It doesn't matter. Even if it went 40 miles an hour, if a police car is going 20, it doesn't matter. He's that much further ahead of you. And he was a daredevil. He was apparently an incredible driver, took lots of risks, which eventually caught up to him. But, you know, when you got nothing to live for, you take greater risks too with that kind of speed. And I just think a lot of the local.
John, are you still there? Oh, we lost him. Sorry. Cell phone connection there dropped out on us. That's John Maggio, who is the writer, director of the documentary Bonnie and Clyde, which will air in 3 weeks on January 19th on PBS. As I mentioned, I got an advanced copy of it and had a chance to look at it, and it is terrific. And if you remember the Arthur Penn movie, they die in a hail of bullets towards the end. John is back on the line here now. I just wanted to ask you one last question about this, John, which is they die in a hail of bullets at the end. Why were they killed by the law instead of caught?
You know, I think they just were so unpredictable. They had gotten away so many times. It was kind of unbelievable how many times they got away. I don't want to give too much away for the audience, but there was someone who had sort of turned code on them, who had made a deal with Texas and Louisiana. And I think killing Bonnie and Clyde made more sense to uphold that deal. It was sort of a trade-off, but it's a little complicated. I want people to see the film. I don't want to give too much away. But also, isn't it the perfect ending for them? I mean, if they had been caught and sort of withered away in jail, they could have kept telling their story and gotten even more famous, probably. And I think that the FBI and the local authorities just wanted to be done with these guys. They had killed quite a few people on their road trip.
Well, the documentary is a really, really enjoyable look at the two of them. And not only do you have those two relatives we mentioned, but you also have other historians who knew so much about them. And you have relatives of some of the lawmen who were going after them in 1933. And it's a fascinating story and very well told. Congratulations on that. And thanks for joining me this morning.
Thanks a lot. I really appreciate it.
As John Maggio, who is the writer-director of Bonnie and Clyde. Again, it airs January 19th on Channel 9 here in St. Louis and on PBS stations all across the country.